Get ready. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host for another episode. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guest. It is episode 194 of the Weekly Cooldown, and it is June 30th, the last day of Gay Month. Gay Month's ending. Can you believe it? It's officially the end of Gay Pride, and we're going straight into Gay Wrath. Paul isn't here, obviously, doing some things. Hopefully they're gay. Because that's what we're going to talk about. As you know, for June, the Weekly Cooldown does all gay and trans and lesbian things. That's all we talk about on the show for a while. We try to make it relatable to gaming, but as I've said a few times now for the past couple of episodes, this has been a stranger Pride Month than usual. There are a lot of anti-trans, anti-gay things happening in the world right now, both here in the United States and abroad. And it's been kind of a tough one, but we are nonetheless here. Queer, get used to it. And so joining me for this gay episode is good friend Sam.
Hey, Jace, there's something I want to show you real quick.
Sup? Hold on. Okay.
So there's this video that I saw, and it's somebody making this pretty groundbreaking jerk chicken.
No, shut up. No.
Sorry.
I knew it was a fake video, but I was still like, you can't put that out on the internet. People will believe you.
I know. No,
people it's will just, think it's real.
There have been so many of those. Like, I've seen less of them lately. But like the TikTok videos that are like instructional and they just like have unfettered chaos going on with them. Like, I kind of love them if from like a, just like this is complete insanity and stupid, and I love it. But yeah, there's a lot where it's just like, what are people doing? Are people actually engaging in this and learning from this? I'm afraid.
Yeah. There's people I've seen who have like, I've never had jerk chicken before. And I'm like, oh God.
God, you're not. I don't know what that is.
It is not that. It is not that video.
I don't know. It's just boiling. You just boil everything. Anyway, don't do it.
Don't actually watch it. Don't engage with it. Don't believe his lies.
I know. Especially when it comes to chicken. You don't want to cook incorrectly. Not really, that's very bad. Yes, do not enjoy his lies. Do not do it.
Well, Sam, I have something else to say.
Okay, what do you have to
say? You specifically called me out to be on this this month's episode.
Listen, I'm just saying, it's like if you're gonna do a gay month and you're not going to invite one of your gayest friends who has a website URL that ends in .gay. I do own the samneelan.gay URL.
You do.
I have claimed it. I have been here. I am still queer. People are probably tired of it, but you know,
get used to it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like they're just done. They're like, whatever. This man, he's old now. This man is old. He's just
Well.
Nah, it's just like, oh, he's over 30.
Sorry, old man.
Sorry,
it's Gen Z's turn.
Uh-huh, exactly. We gotta go with the what's the other one? What are they saying before Gen Z now? I can't even remember anymore.
Oh, I don't know.
Like, there's just so many words where I'm like, what does this even mean?
Yeah, I'll figure it out when everyone starts complaining about them.
Yeah, exactly.
We haven't started complaining about them yet.
I mean, I haven't complained about them because it's like I'm still complaining about old people. Because let me tell you, old people, the fuck's wrong with you?
Messing it up for the rest of us.
Exactly. He's like, oh, we'll take you down with us. It's like, cool, thanks.
Sam, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
What have you been playing this week?
I mean, I've been playing everybody's favorite series that they are now debating if they want to keep adding the numbers to it or not, because it's been going on for a while. Final Fantasy 16, yeah, yeah. That's the one. That is the one. I play it. I do have a PS5. I've had a PS5 for a while now.
Yeah.
I actually had it shut down at one point while playing it because I think it overheated the console for a minute.
Oh, God.
It was just really fun. It's like, and it just went off, and I'm like, yeah, no, so, and it, like, you know, it's been fine since then, but it was at one point, it was during, like, there were a lot of cutscenes with a lot of effects and everything.
Mm.
So yeah, it's, you know, it definitely will make your console go, like, whew,
sheesh.
I need to chill out a bit.
Yeah.
Although I haven't gotten through the whole way through it, so I can't speak for the whole story yet, because I like to wait until I get to the end before I talk about anything story-wise. Generally gonna avoid that. I will say, though, it is an excellent action game.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels great to play, and there's some really, I'm trying to think, first, it's very funny because there's a lot of abilities in that game that are ripped straight from Dragon's Dogma that they put into Final Fantasy 16.
Interesting.
Okay. There's one where you, like, basically put, like, a magic orb in the middle of, like, an area, and if you keep hitting it, it'll, like, make, you know, do damage around the area of a magical thing. That's a spell from Dragon's Dogma. So okay. I kind of laughed when I got that because I was like, oh, yeah, I know that one. The combat designer is the guy who did Dragon's Dogma and also Devil May Cry 5. And did you ever play Devil May Cry 5?
No, I'm not much of a Devil May Cry person, so yeah. I'm not up on any of them. Really.
Yeah, I played it. It was good to tie me over until Bayonetta 3 inevitably came out.
Sure.
I've never had a very good relationship with Devil May Cry, if only because I find the way that it wants you to execute combos.
Mm.
Combos and, like, you know, like juggling and everything, you know, like that. It's never felt good to me. I don't understand how people think that it's like, this is sublime. But I mean, I also started on Bayonetta was kind of like the first action game that I ever played in that thing. And Bayonetta it's incredible. Like, that's just, you just feel great. And it feels like you always have a good enough time to do stuff. But Devil May Cry and even Devil May Cry 5, I just could not get it into the same level. It felt so restrictive on what you're able to do. And a lot of its combos were based around, like, changing your weapons. And so that was kind of the thing that it really wanted you to do. But the problem is that it's like, it never, like, it always felt inconsistent going between the different weapons. Like, it never felt like, you know, I'm hitting with the sword and then I start punching and I go back into sword. It's like you have to completely abandon what you were doing with the sword and just think about how you want to play with the fist style instead, which was never really a great feeling to me. And I think 16 kind of solves that by, like, you just have the sword, but you change your moves up by changing, like, what your icon magic powers are.
Hmm.
And that, to me, has made so much of a difference, because jumping between those and, you know, creating, like, super juggling chain combo stuff with that has been very, very good feeling. And okay. I think it's just because of having that sword, that one weapon, with the very specific, you know, move set with it, mm-hmm. and figuring out how to move between that and the different icon powers, it's very good. Like, because I'm telling friends where it's like, it does that part very well, and it's what makes it so fun, and kind of just what really just makes it feel really good in general. I also like parries just feel really good in the game. There was one, that I had the other night. I posted a clip on Twitter where it's just like going against a boss where they were about to do, like, this big downward strike. And so I had it jump up, hit them right as they were doing their downward strike, and just, like, fucking just plant them on the ground with, like, a giant, like, slap down. And it was just like, this is awesome. This fighting feels very good.
Yeah, yeah.
So in terms of the gameplay, it's a very good action, which is interesting, because a lot of people are saying this isn't Final Fantasy. Which,
yeah, I think a lot of people are often just like Final Fantasy can never stick to one specific character, it also can never really stick to one specific system of battle.
Well, and that's kind of the thing with it. That's always been its thing. And so it's kind of... okay, so I'm not, like, the oldest Final Fantasy head, but I am quite an old Final Fantasy head. My first Final Fantasy was Final Fantasy IV, which, I mean, I wouldn't say that I played it first. I usually watched my sister play it, and I was just like, oh, okay, whatever. Which, by the way, fun fact, because when Final Fantasy IV came out, I couldn't read yet because I was still like a baby toddler age or something like that. And so my sister, the awesome human being that she is, would read it aloud for me. And eventually it helped me start reading in general. So thank you, Holly, for introducing reading to me by way of Final Fantasy, which isn't a great translation for English when it came out. No. But hey, we all start somewhere.
Yep.
But yeah, no, and so I always kind of have, like, fond memories of that. Same thing with Final Fantasy VI, where it's, like, I used to confuse potion and poison. So I'd say, like, oh no, they're using the bad potion. She's just like, that's not potion. So I've been, you know, into the series forever, and so I've always seen, like, all the different changes. And so maybe it's just having been so long with that, the idea of them turning Final Fantasy into an action game kind of just goes like, yeah, why not? I don't care. That's fine. If it feels good and it plays great, I think that's okay.
Yeah.
And also, like, the turn-based RPG thing was, like, you know, it wasn't like they did it because they thought it was the best. They did it was because it was what they could do with the hardware at the time.
Right.
You know, where it's like, and they were basically adapting basically Dungeons & Dragons and trying to make it a playable video game.
Yeah.
And so that's what they did. And so, you know, it's just like that. I don't know. It becoming an action game just doesn't seem that weird to me.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm also the weird person where, like, I know some people do not like 12 for its Gambit combat system because they feel like they're not doing anything. I loved it. I loved being able to go into my menus and setting, like, 400 if-then statements in order to, like, make this combat system that was incredible. And it was great because I would just walk into an area and I would just see them fight. And they would just, like, completely, you know, like, destroy it. And, like, because I like to spend the time for all this conditional setup. So, I guess maybe in that way, it's like, I've always been interested in engaging with the systems and what they're doing and seeing where it goes.
Yeah.
And I'm finding the same thing in playing 16. Because it has a lot of interesting action stuff that I, as I'm getting into it and exploring the depth of it, I'm like, this is awesome. This is great. Isn't it an RPG? I don't really care. It's a fantasy game, and there's cool big summons with explodey magic things, and there you go. That's good enough for me. It still looks like Final Fantasy. It tastes like Final Fantasy.
There's a Cid in it.
There is a Cid, and
that's it.
Boy, howdy. Let me just say, that man, when he speaks, it's like hearing just a collection of, like, precious gems rolling around in a bold wooden bowl. And it's just like, oh, sir, please continue talking. I could listen to you talk. Please read podcasts, audiobooks or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, so that's with that.
Very good.
But, yeah, it's... yeah, I'll definitely have some thoughts on story stuff as I get further into it, because there's some stuff that is just more baffling than anything else. But yeah, it's like, okay, all right, well, but I will kind of say this, and this is probably going to be my hottest take, and this isn't even about 16 specifically, but a lot of people got really excited when they said, oh, it's being handled by the team that basically wrote and developed Heavensward. And I'm like, okay, but I'm gonna be the weirder here. I don't think the story in Heavensward is as good as a lot of people like to remember it being.
Okay.
And like,
I don't disagree.
I just remember that because it's like, because I started playing in Heavensward, and I know I had to kind of, like, rush through it and blah, blah. But, you know, when we got to that, and we got to Stormblood, and then we got into Shadowbringers, there was, like, this really, just a lot of people saying, it's like, oh man, Heavensward was so good, and I'm just kind of like, it was okay. I don't think it was that good, guys, but I don't know. Maybe that's the weirdo of me. And so just... the way that I've seen certain things in story, I'm just kind of like, yeah, this is about kind of what I expect So, like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people sort of still have this weird story comparison between, like, Heavensward and Shadowbringers, mm-hmm. and that they're, like, being kind of, like, on par with each other. I don't really think so. And when I'm playing through the story of 16, I can definitely see a lot of the stuff that I was like, okay, and kind of seeing it there. And yeah. So,
I mean, I think yeah. it makes sense for the type of setting they seem to be going for with 16 yeah. for that yeah. crew to be the main. Yeah,
it is. But there's just certain, just sort of like, okay, Heavensward is good. It's a perfectly well done story. It makes sense. It flows. There's not any issue with like the presentation, which I mean, kind of is the same thing with 16, where it's just like, you know, stuff goes. There are small scenes in 16 that I'm like, all right, this is the good shit that I want, that I'm here for. But like just looking at a bigger picture thing, I'm kind of like finding a lot of the same, just inconsistencies and, I'm trying to figure out the word to say it where it's like doing something to create some sort of effect, but not quite getting what it is that they're trying to do with it, and maybe not leaning far enough into explaining certain aspects of sure. it. So that's kind of like the way, that's like the most non-spoilery way I can mention it, but and I found that there was a lot of stuff in, you know, in Heavensward that was about that too. So I don't know, it just kind of all checks out with me being kind of that way, but you know, I have to get to the end. I only got to like time skip number 2, and there's still a lot more to go, so it's just like, okay, whatever. And it just seems interesting, strange, weird decision that certain things that were kind of focused upon just kind of being dropped, which makes me feel like they didn't really care about this part, which makes me wonder why were they writing about it in the first place then. But sorry, sure, like that's just what I'm thinking about, where it's like, why are you doing this? Okay, whatever. Anyway, so but you know, like the greater like cosmic Final Fantasy stuff that's in there, it's like, no, I'm down for this. I'm up for this. This is interesting. But yeah, it's it'll be interesting. I'm just curious to see where it goes now, just to be like, okay, like I just need to know where it's all going. But
yeah.
But yeah, that was it. Have not gotten to the alleged gay sex scene yet.
Alleged.
It's not gonna
be anything we want or need.
I don't know. That was like the reason that they were like banning sale of it in like, was it Saudi Arabia or something?
Yeah, or something.
Which is like, okay, all right. Well, now I just have to see what it is that they wouldn't want. But yeah, haven't gotten to there yet. Have gotten, you know, whatever. We'll see. I'll see how it goes. I'm still enjoying it just because the combat's very good.
Yeah.
And Soken's
music. It seems like a very good game.
Soken music in, holy shit. Like, Soken is just, I don't want to say I love him. I do. But you know, it's kind of a weird thing to say to anybody that you don't really know. But it's definitely like, all right, yeah, the music is absolutely Soken as fuck. And that's a good thing because Soken is very good at making music. And I was very happy to see his name there in a mainline Final Fantasy.
Yeah, yeah.
It got me kind of emotional. And it's right at the opening credits. And I'm just like, there's my boy. There he is. All grown up.
Yeah.
From Mario 3-on-3 hoops to Final Fantasy 16.
He's making his way downtown.
Walking fast. Anyway. So, yeah. That's what I've been playing.
Very cool.
Okay.
Excellent. So now we are going to move on to the reason for the season. Mm. And that is, you know, Game On stuff.
Yes.
So we've spoken a lot about, you know, all throughout the gaming space, how we interact with being part of the LGBTQ community and how we navigate it. So today, I want to talk about just kind of how we navigate being gay as a whole.
Yes.
I think it's important to recognize that this doesn't exist in a vacuum, right?
No.
We are not just gay on the internet. We are gay for real all the time, forever.
Exactly.
So the theme for this episode is just simply gay. And my first question really does still specifically focus in on the gaming community, but can be expanded upon.
Well, it's just like in general, like game adjacent community right. stuff. Like, you know, it's like
it can include like all movies, kinds comics, of people.
Anime,
yeah.
anime.
So
anime. Anyway.
I've seen a lot of people on the internet saying a lot of interesting things, especially when it comes to
a lot of interesting things. I'm just like, wait, that's a loaded word.
I'm being very nice about it. Yes. A lot of interesting things when it comes to gay and trans rights, right? Just the idea that gay and trans folks should be respected, treated as well. Yeah, you know, the same way anyone else would be treated, right? So,
yeah.
The thing that kind of sparked this question into my mind was I remember seeing someone go on a tangent about how gay people, trans people, you know, people in the community have never contributed anything to society. And I guess my first thought was one of the historical gays who, you know, helped us win certain wars and then was persecuted for being gay, Alan Turing.
Yeah.
So I guess to get to the point here, my first question is, how do we fight back against the narrative that we have, quote unquote, done nothing? Let's say for the world, but also if we want to zero in on it, for the gaming community.
Yeah. So part of the difficult part about that whole thing is that any sort of amazing thing that any queer person has ever done, you know, well, not anything, but a lot of things, like, doesn't really have any direct correlation to their queerness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it seems like there's this idea that if you are a queer person, anything good and amazing that you do always needs to be attached and related to what your queerness is.
Sure.
And it's like, it creates this weird side effect to where, because here's the problem. We want to be able to express ourselves and mm-hmm. express our queerness, and we do, and we like to, and we do so. And we do it not for anybody else, but mostly for ourselves. But the problem is that this idea that us expressing it is in some way trying to enforce how we want to affect people's perceptions of the world in a way. And that, like, I guess the way that I would say it is that a lot of people who are, you know, very, I don't want to say aggressive, hostile toward LGBTQ people, have this idea that us expressing our identity, our expression, our, you know, orientation, whatever, is done in some sort of way to attack against them. That is what they believe. That is what they've been kind of raised to believe. And it's like, no, it's really not. Like, we do it for ourselves. And so that becomes the issue in everything, is just everything that any queer person does, if it is amazing and if it is good and if it is world changing, people immediately want to associate that we are in some way trying to attack the mere concept of, like, heteronormativity. And it's like, that's not what's going on here at all. Like, it's to constantly be in that state where you feel like that is being attacked against you in some sort of way, by not being the same as you, like that, it's the most frustrating thing, I suppose, to where it is that, you know, if a queer person wants to do something that is amazing, and they do, and it seems like people are much more quick to criticize that personal identity and expression than what the work that they've actually done is. And it's kind of just the big thing that's on about it, is that there's no, like, there's still this fundamental belief that queer people are inferior and should not be existing in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do anything good, then, or if they do anything that affects the lives of people in some sort of positive way, whether it's like, you know, some sort of development in like, you know, scientific frontiers, artistic, you know, philosophical, whatever. If they do anything like that, and if it's a queer person that does it, that doubles as an attack to those who think that queer people are inferior. And they do not want to look at it like what the good thing that it is that they have done. And it's constantly frustrating because, you know, at least if I kind of speak within myself, like any sort of the art that I do, like I don't, whenever I make art, I'm not making it explicitly in the mind of like being that this is about queerness in some sort of way. There is a level of queerness that is in it, but I want to write things or I want to make things that make anybody have some sort of like, emotional or intellectual response to it. And I want it to be something that people can get from regardless of their sameness or differentness, sure. You know, anything that's same or different from me. And that's kind of how I think about a lot of the stuff that I do. Mm-hmm. And it's it's frustrating because then if I do that, people are saying, well, so you're trying to like suppress the part that's queerness about you. And it's like, no, I'm not. Like, yeah. It's just, I'm not trying to do that either. I'm just trying to make something that connects with anybody in any sort of certain way. And that's the most frustrating thing of all, is it's like, I just want to connect with people at all.
Yeah.
And right. It's just like, and it's just, God, how fucking frustrating that is constantly. Yeah, yeah. It is the number one thing that is just so difficult in any sort of way. And it just, I don't know, like that's the most difficult thing that I can think of in, you know, any of this. And so how do you navigate that? And it's just, I think that's been kind of like the big thing that we've sort of had to figure out, because for the longest time, you know, queerness was something that was suppressed and kept quiet. And we are at a point now where it's like, you know, it's clear that you can't suppress it and quiet anymore. You can try mm-hmm. it, but you're going to get like a lot of people that are back, you know, pushing back against it. And I right. think as we get, you know, as we're no longer at that point, we're starting to approach a point where it's just getting a lot more complicated. Or at least we're having to approach ideas of like, how does a queer person connect with any other person at all?
Mm-hmm.
On a level that is both understanding of what the queerness means for that person and what they do and how they are and how they exist and how they respond to things. But also understanding that it is not the queerness itself that is almost kind of the part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I think about it is that, like, you know, when you are growing up queer, you sort of develop a lot of like, you know, response, safety mechanisms, habits, just ways that you kind of like approach situations. You know, all of that, like you try to find ways to navigate the world.
Yeah.
When you're understanding that it is against you.
Different mechanisms for different situations.
And I think what a lot of people, and this is something that a lot of people inside and outside of queer spaces don't really think about, is how living and growing up with that in your life affects all of the decisions and all of the responses that you make in your life in general. And I think that understanding is kind of really what is going to be the thing that is really what's going to be focused on. Because how you understand, you know, connections to other people and how you approach them is going to be very different between somebody who is cisgendered and heterosexual versus somebody who is, you know, some level of queerness.
Mm-hmm.
What the kind of way that they talk, the questions that they ask, the way that they respond to things, the amount of time they take to respond to things. And that's not it's just, it's something that happens because of what we've kind of built as our own tool set. And I think it's just trying to communicate what that tool set is and what effects it creates is it's a really difficult thing, especially because a lot of that does come down to a personal level. Because you even have the same thing where it's like, you know, someone who grew up in a city or part of the world where, you know, queerness is generally more accepted, their tool set is going to be completely different from those who have had to live in a place where it is suppressed, where sure. It is deemed with. And I think that's especially a huge problem that we've all kind of run into and are having to confront at this time. And that's why I feel like that should be when you are looking at any sort of piece, you know, when you're looking at any sort of piece of media that is made by like a queer person, there's much more to be learned in how they want to write certain, or how they want to present certain situations and how that differs than, you know, like a lot of media from like not expressively queer people.
Right.
And seeing how they want to, the ways that they want to tell story, the way that they want to write characters, the way that they want to present things, you know, regarding like emotion, color, tone, anything like that. And I feel that by not looking at that aspect and not thinking about it in that greater way is kind of a disservice to, you know, what is really kind of a pretty deep and meaningful thing about queerness in general.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that's when I kind of like think that is, and it's a frustrating thing to deal with because, you know, you have a thing where, you know, if a queer person makes some sort of piece of art, if there's not something that is explicitly queer in it, you know, you know, on a certain point, it almost seems like, well, why does this need to be labeled as being done by a queer person at all then? And it's like, because there's a lot more that goes on there in the mindset of creation than just the explicit expression of queerness.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is the one thing that I have been loving to see more in a lot of like queer media. And it is something that I desperately wish more people would look into and think about, because I think about that a lot in my own work as well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's just kind of like what's been on my mind lately. And especially like in the past couple of years, like, you know, with COVID and everything that happened, you know, it's just like all of that mindset really just kind of changes in a way.
Yeah. You also bring up a good point in that a lot of folks also have the, well, why do we have to know their sexual orientation?
Yeah.
And I think there's two reasons why, right? First of all is like because for so many years, you didn't care to know, right?
Yeah. And, like the first one is representation,
right.
Like,
and
to say we exist.
You didn't care to know in a way that was not like, oh, I don't care that you're gay. It was, I don't care that you're gay, and also I find you disgusting, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, it is absolutely important that you know that we're gay when we're producing these works. And the other reason why it's important is, I think you said earlier that it's just kind of like a way of tacitly acknowledging that, like, yes, this was made by a queer person. We can make this same art, and we can interact with you, even though you may not be queer in the same way.
Yeah.
Finding the kind of inroads to connect with one another through our art or through anything else, right? I mean, like I said, Alan Turing is like considered to be the father of AI, and look where we are now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it
even like the person who like developed like the arm chip? Isn't like she like a who was it? I'm trying to remember now. Hold on a second. I'm going to look at it. Go ahead and keep talking.
So. Well, Alan Turing, mathematician, broke a lot of codes during, I think, World War One. No, yeah. World War Two. The man who cracked the Nazi code is the movie. And, you know, was a very lauded over, good at what he was doing, right? A very lauded mathematician. But then also turned out to be gay and was persecuted for it, right? So, like, you know, when you ask the question, you know, why do we have to know? Well, it's literally because of this, right? We have to... we've had to fight for our lives despite the fact that we're fighting for your life as well. A la Alan Turing. But anyway, that's a slight aside.
So I was thinking of Sophie Wilson, where she was kind of like the she helped design the BBC Micro and then the ARM architecture, and she had recently transitioned in 1994. So that's exactly. So that's and ARM chips are like the thing that technology uses now. Like, that's like the big chip thing. So, you know, like, that kind of goes in the same way where it's like, oh, look at these queer people who are making things that change the lives. But yeah, no, it's just, yeah, it's I feel like the thing that would be, that can be learned from anything, the thing that can be learned anything about, you know, people who are queer is that I was about to say we're just built different. No, it's not that. But it's just that our minds do work differently. And I think understanding that, and even like, I think it's important to understand that because it starts to make it apparent, like, what having a mind works that way, what effects that has on the work or the thoughts or the creations that people do. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, especially, and also just what, you know, like what it is that we can understand from each other in a certain sort of way. 'Cause, you know, I could never convince a straight dude to consider being into dudes. I mean, I guess I could. I don't know how well it would work. And I generally don't want to do that in general because I don't want to, like, I don't like trying to force people into thinking of something that they don't. People have to come to their own conclusions on anything. But when I do talk about that, I do mention, like, these are the things that I think about when I want to get close to anybody. You know, whether, not just in terms of like romantic connections, but even just like general social friendly connections, or how I want to connect with people on, like, even just like on a surface level, how I want to handle a situation that might be stressful and involves some level of negotiation. Like, there's a lot to be learned from that, and I feel that by taking in the understanding of what someone's purpose and intent for something is, but then also understanding their background and how they want to respond to anything in general, I think there's so much to be learned from that. And that's why whenever the idea that, well, you know, it's like them being queer shouldn't have to matter, and it's like, but it does. It just matters in ways that you don't think about. And it matters in ways that are much more deeply personal. And they are ways that, you know, they are ways that someone, if they come to understand the reasons and the methods by which somebody does something, and if in some way that helps them figure out something else that is going on in their own life, or understanding themselves, I think that to try and suppress that aspect of their person is a disservice to coming to an understanding of identity and existence in general. And so that's a really hard thing to get anybody to understand, because it requires this kind of really outside level of thinking beyond oneself. And a lot more it relates to, you know, it relates to the concept of relativism, in which that, you know, there is no absolute answers in anything, and everything instead is a result of a limited context and the way that those contexts interact with each other. And I think that's something that just really, really, really needs to be understood a lot more. You know, because it's in such a way where even if somebody is against what you believe in or what you understand, like, by understanding the context of which they are reacting to certain things or the way that they are understanding or behaving around certain things, understanding that context is so much more helpful in trying to find a way forward and solving problems. And solving problems in a way that is much more than just making it go away. Because making something go away is never... it's never a real solution. It is a temporary solution, and it is one that more and more proves that it's just not going to work at all. It's something that you stave off for the time being. To make something go away does not create progress. It merely puts it on hold and builds things up. And so that's why, you know, even when I'm, even in a situation where I'm dealing with people who I think, I think they make the most baffling decisions as human beings, I find it so much more helpful and important to understand the context to which they are making these things. Because it gives me a foundation to understand of what is broken and what is it that we can do to fix it or find a better way instead of just getting rid of it. Because I don't think getting rid of it solves anything ever at any point. It's just giving up, and I fucking hate that. I think that's kind of just something that really just needs to be understood, especially when in regards to queerness, and in regards to what it is that queer people do and how important it is to understand the contextual experience of a queer person and how it affects what it is that they bring into the world. And so that's kind of really a lot of my big feel thoughts on that. So
very good.
Anyway, sorry. Got on a soapbox there.
Well, it's a good thing you did, because you answered all other questions that I had. You answered every single one of them.
Oopsie, sorry, so everybody. I
barely even need to do my job. It's just Sam's time.
Listen, if you get me on like a fucking soapbox, like I'll go on. I'll keep going on. Sam's soapbox. God, I could not imagine. No. No. Like, listen, I like to talk. I don't know if I could do that much, that often, that regularly. That's why I only appear on the show every once in a while. Because, like, all right, I'm done. No more talking anymore. I'm done. I need to go sleep now. But yeah, no, it's just, so yeah, that's just a lot of what's kind of been going through, you know, my thoughts lately.
One more question.
Okay.
Last time you were on, we spoke about the gay awakening. So we're going to go over that again. The gay awakening.
We're doing the gay sleepening now?
That's so funny. The gay awakening. The idea, of course, that there's some kind of media or some moment where you recognized, oh, this is different. And so we're also going to add in a few little wrinkles. So we'll go over again what you believe your thing was, your gay awakening was. But then I found myself doing this recently. I found that there was something that happened that made me think, oh, I'm really into this. Like, it reaffirmed my gayness, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So give me one and one, right? One thing that, like, definitely got the wheels turning, like, probably as a youngin', and then, like, later on in life, you were like, oh, okay, this is also different.
This is exactly what it is. Boy, that's a really hard question. Because when I think about the gay awakening, it's so much of a thing where I, like, look back, and I'm like, oh, that's what that fascination was, huh? All right. You didn't understand that. I think mine was a toss-up between having a crush on Ramza from Final Fantasy Tactics, or having a crush on Zero from Mega Man X. I don't know why. All things. I think that was more just like my interest in robots in general, but whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think about that, but God, to really think about like what kind of emboldened that in some sort of way. Because it's just, I mean, it's so weird because I think about it where when I was growing up, there really wasn't any media that I saw where it showed like two dudes being like mm-hmm. in a romantic relationship with each other. Most of the time, whenever I saw anything, it was usually fan fiction that people posted
right, yeah.
on fanfiction.net or on Guy Online.
Oh right, my God. Yep.
Jesus Christ. Where it's just, I just kind of think about that, but, I mean, I do think there might have been one thing that kind of really affirmed it, being like, oh, there's something, this is doing something to me that mm-hmm. is a lot more powerful, and it was seeing Majora's Mask Fierce Deity Link, because it was, because it's like, listen, it was just the model of Adult Link from, Ocarina of Time, and I remember being like, it's like, oh, it like, looks like really cool and stuff, blah, 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 and then seeing Fierce Deity, it's like, There's another feeling that I'm feeling right now.
A different one.
I don't know how to describe it. It's just like this man, this energy, this everything with it. Because it's just like, you know, the incredible dark feeling of just like, oh, this is a man. This is like, I guess that was kind of the awakening of the feeling of like, I can fix him.
Yeah, right.
Which I think is just such a funny thing. But yeah, it's so... It's so funny just to think back. I mean, that's the thing that's most amusing, is just looking back at things that at the time I hadn't realized that was probably indications of me being gay.
Yeah.
But then like looking at it in hindsight, being like, oh, that's why I like that character from that video game, or that's why I like that character mm-hmm, from that mm-hmm. anime. That's why I like that character from the blah, blah, blah. I will say though that this might be a little bit more, this might be a little bit more heady to kind of like understanding in regards to like demisexuality, because it took me a while to kind of realize that was a thing about me. Like, I didn't know about that until it was like in my mid-20s.
Sure.
And I didn't even know it was a thing that existed. But I just remember especially, let me just say here, in the early 2000s, like, gay anime and manga is not good. Not good at all.
It's barely good now.
No, it's listen.
It's a little better.
There is a lot of good stuff that I need to force you to read, and you'll be understanding. Like, right, oh my God, Sam. But a lot of that was just like, you know, me understanding. Like, okay, I guess I'm gay, and it's like I'll look into this stuff, and just seeing the way that sexuality was displayed in that, where it was like such a physical kind of thing, mm-hmm. and how much like my brain just went like, no, I don't like this. This is not good or anything. And I just remember that putting me through like just kind of like a mental head spin for a while. And I thought, am I actually gay? Am I not? I don't know. I just can't feel anything with this one, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until like, you know, maybe like in the mid, 2010s and such, when I started seeing, I'll talk about one manga in particular, called, it has 20 names, Stranger by the Shore, Stranger by the Seaside. Either way, it's by an author and artist named Kii Kana. Mm. And it was kind of like the first love story between two dudes that actually really kind of focused a lot on the difficulties of like developing a relationship and the kind of things of just, you know, it like, yes, of course the two had sex, but there was a lot more that was being talked about in terms of just like finding a sense of comfort and reliability, I suppose.
Mm.
And that's when it kind of, and just sort of realizing like, no, I do want this. I just don't want, like, I just can't do this like physical connection, you know, with something. And it wasn't until like later I was kind of learning what demisexuality is. And it's like, oh, that's what that is. Okay. I understand that now. But it's just, I just remember how difficult it was just realizing that you're gay, but realizing you're not the kind of gay that most people would be, I suppose. And just really having a lot of difficulty coming to terms with that, just because, you know, a lot of queer media at the time was, at least, you know, during that time of the 2000s, was very sex focused. Mm-hmm. And it was something that, like, I mean, do I enjoy gay sex? Sure. But is it something that is on the front of my mind? Not really. Mm-hmm. And it's why now, when I am seeing that there is media that is talking beyond that and sort of understanding the more personal kind of social connections between queer people in general, I'm just very glad to see it, because at least when you're in a point where you're still developing your own sense of expression, identity, orientation, any of that, just having those different, you know, I don't want to say styles, but, you know, just having those different examples of, like, what a relationship is and what falling in love is just kind of been helpful. And seeing more people wanting to showcase and display that in media is just, that's been nice, honestly, and I would like to see a lot more of it still, because yeah. I think it's extremely important. And I think it's also important just that, I guess, a lot more now media is willing to show what insecurity means in a lot of these situations, what it is that people are afraid of, what it is that they find makes them not feel afraid. So I just kind of think about that, where that was the most difficult part in, like, having a gay awakening, was just understanding, okay, I'm into dudes, but why do I struggle so much at finding myself relating to any media that portrays it? Mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of what I think about it, where it's like, I know, I'm sorry, my gay awakening augmentation was a little more depressing sounding, but it's
going to say, you sort of answered it already, but the second part to this question is actually, like, do you think that having this type of media really does help someone to come to some kind of realization or help them come out?
And it does, because it makes it, it's the thing with queerness is that it's like, much like everything else in real life, there's no absolutes. Everything is, like I say, sorry, just me, the king of relativism, you know, awareness here. Like, everything has context associated to it. And the more context that there is, the more that people are able to understand, you know, the self and the selves of others as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if anybody who's ever making anything thinks that, well, this is my own experience, I don't know if anybody else will relate to it or anybody wants to look at this. And it's like, there are people who they will want to. They don't even have to necessarily relate to it, but they want to understand and see it. And they want to, you know, like, find some sort of, you know, some sort of connection to it, which may not be the same way that you would directly connect with it.
Yeah.
And so that's why I really wish more people would just be like, just make the thing as you feel it should be done, and just do it that way, and let people who engage with it decide on what kind of meaning that they want to attach to it, I suppose. Yeah,
sure.
I mean, that's kind of like what I think about a lot about that, is that even the if Luke you're Skywalker even if, approach. I guess a better way to say it would be like, you know, even if your own experience does not directly connect to the experience somebody else has, there are always parts of it that will. And I think that that is very important.
I was reminded of Mark Hamill saying in an interview that, like, people would ask him if Luke is gay, and he would say, if that is your interpretation of it, then of course he is.
Yeah. It's like, he's just like, why not?
Absolutely gay. Yes.
Like, there's no reason not to. It's a lot what yeah, there's just a lot that goes into that. And I guess there's a lot to be said also is just like, you know, there's always a different experience than when you're taking something at face value versus when you're understanding the intent of the author, I suppose. And I think there's even value in that in a way where, you know, something might be going against the intent of the author in some sort of way, but I don't think that means it's necessarily the wrong way to do it. The wrong thing to do would be to look at a piece of media and saying, this is what this person meant by saying this. And if that goes against what that person is saying, you know, the person who made it, you shouldn't be saying that, because you shouldn't be saying what the intent of somebody else is when you don't know it. However, sure, if you look at something and you can say, like, I can interpret this being done this way and this way and understood through this lens, I think there's value to that. And I think there's value to that understanding. And I think there's value to understanding that there is that ambiguity being there is a valuable thing. And so, you know, that's even when I talk about like fandom stuff where it's like, you know, the most common one that I always hear is like whenever there's like a character where somebody's being gay and usually straight person's defense is like, well, why would they be gay? It's like, that's not what it is. It doesn't make sense. And it's like, okay, let's think about this for a second. Let's just say it goes against what the author is saying right there. Whatever. I'm not going to debate that. But why is it so difficult to even amuse the thought of it and think of it in any sort of way and think of potential that could be done from it? And every time I hear that response, like, it doesn't make sense. It's like, why doesn't it make sense if you're not thinking about it within the way that is established? Right. Why are you not thinking about it making sense within the presentation of the situation at a surface level without knowing the background behind it? And so it's probably the most frustrating thing that I deal with any of that, where people want to say, no, that's not what this is. And it's just like, okay, it's not what it is. But why can we not, like, not think about the potential of that being a thing and deriving some sort of meaning from that? So, yeah. Anyway, that's just kind of what I think about a lot with that.
Very
it's
good.
Just that,
anyway, yeah. So, you did it.
I did it. I did it. You didn't have to. It's just been me talking for, like, I don't know, what has it been, like, 2 hours? An hour? No, it's only been an hour.
So. I have barely had to do anything. I feel like... That's my whole job. Exactly. I feel great about it.
I should just start doing video essays on YouTube. I will never do video essays on YouTube. I can't.
Well, we will skip to the recommendations part and close out of this episode.
Oh my God.
Which game should people be playing or be on the lookout for?
Oh, no. What should people be playing? I don't know. Hold on. I got to turn on my Switch and, like, actually, no. I will say... It took me a while to get to it, but I finally got around to playing Live Alive. That game is very good. It's incredibly good, I would say, as some people might want to do. And I know a lot of people kind of just didn't bother with it because it sort of came out at a weird time.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there's a lot in it that I really enjoy. And it's also... I was surprised at how much that game is about, like, what if we made a bunch of, like, miniature RPGs that all played differently... but sort of worked within the same system. Like,
yeah, right.
It's, and I'm like, this is actually really cool, and it's really nice to be able to just kind of, like, have something that feels familiar connecting between the most of them, but they all kind of play a bit differently as well. I would say if, like, you kind of bounced on that, like, or, you know, if you didn't want to buy it because it was on Nintendo Switch, because it's on PC now. I think it's on PlayStation and Xbox too now, isn't it?
I'm not sure, actually.
I think, hold on a second. Let's look at that. Live Alive. It is, yeah, it's on PC. It is on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Super Nintendo Entertainment System.
Oh, yeah.
You can find that one. Windows. So, yes, Wii U? Oh, yeah, because they would have had the virtual console. So, yeah, so you can get it on Switch, PlayStation, and Windows. Sorry, Xbox. Yep. Sorry, Xbox. Just nobody wants to make anything for you, but yeah, whatever. Microsoft has its own stuff that it's doing, and yeah. It has its own things that it's working on. So, yeah, Live Alive. It's available in a lot of places now. I guess you could find the Super Nintendo version if you really wanted to, but, you know.
Yeah, it might be a hassle, but eBay exists.
Too much. Other than that. Otherwise, I don't know. I just want Alan Wake 2 to come out. I want to play Alan Wake 2. Did you see about that thing where they were talking about why Remedy didn't want to do a physical version of it?
Yeah, I don't. So, for the listener, Remedy decided that Alan Wake 2 is going to be digital only. They didn't want to do a physical copy version. And the reason they gave, if I recall correctly, was that... Actually, I can't remember fully.
So the reason why is because whenever there's a physical version of a game that is made, it's basically a cutoff point for production that they can do.
Right, yes. They wanted more time to work on it.
Yeah, which, I mean, you know...
Because you have to work with like CD disc manufacturing,
all that stuff, and especially if they're doing it on multiple consoles or multiple releases, they have to do each one for that one. But it is a pain to do with it. Like for me, at least when I was thinking about that, like I'll be real here, I really don't care about physical games that much. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm like, listen. If you had to see my vinyl collection, you would understand, like, I've already got enough physical things that I'm keeping.
Yeah.
But so for me, I'm just kind of like, it doesn't make that much difference to myself. But I understand why people want to do, like, the physical collections of games. And, like, in the way that Remedy kind of says it, like, I mean, that does mean months of production.
Yeah, I believe them when they say it. I just don't believe it's the best reason.
No. I don't believe it's the best reason either, but I also don't want to say it's the wrong reason.
Yeah, it just feels like.
I feel like the reason that they would do that because it gives them a lot more flexibility on when they can release something, because they just have to be like, okay, we're done, and they get to do it, and they only have to, they only have to get like a month of like,
Yeah, I guess I'll hope that like they eventually make a physical version.
I would imagine that they will. I think I saw Patrick Klepek, formerly of Waypoint, now of Remap. Thank God. Oh my God, I don't know what I've done without that. Anyway, he kind of said, like, it sort of seems like physical games are becoming like the vinyl records of the music industry.
It's like
part of me is like, that's kind of okay. I'm not against that. That's fine.
I've recently started, like, for games that I know that I'm really going to love, I've recently started making sure I have the physical copy. Because I remember really like having physical discs and all the stuff that came with having physical discs.
Yeah.
And it's just
a nice
thing to have.
No, it is. And I think that I kinda hope that if that idea kind of becomes more prevalent going forward, if they do that, I would really like them to like go back to like including a color instruction manual of some sort, just nice packaging and stuff, and not like
little
all this like fucking
bits and stuff.
None of this fucking collector's edition bullshit. Like, no. I'm sorry, I don't need another fucking
just put a nice little book
statue of a man in armor that looks like it's like made of like really chintzy plastic, or like
put a tiny book inside
the stones that came with the Marvel versus Capcom like reboot that they tried to do.
Just put a tiny book inside that says this is the guy you'll be playing as, and then give me his weight, his height, and what food he likes, and I'm good.
I think about that because I just think of like, when we got Final Fantasy VI, when me and my sister as children, I just remember my mother having to like restaple and retape the pages of the manual.
Oh yeah,
because I poured through it for hours because it had a bunch of Amano's art in it, and I would just like look at it and be like, this is so cool, incredible, and like looking at everything. Like just loved, like even if I wasn't playing the game, like I loved having that art.
I loved reading manuals.
It was wonderful, and it's just the fact that that's been kind of gone. Especially like in regards to like production stuff, because you know, it's like we have to have this game come out now, so we just have to like do the bare minimum that comes with. Now you get a physical copy of Final Fantasy 16, and all you get is a leaflet saying, "Hey, there's a free trial for Final Fantasy 14." The critical, you know, like it's just that's thanks. Really funny, we are no, it was very fun. Did you see the Japanese insert of that? And they showed like Mahjong being a thing that you could do in Final Fantasy 14,
which Yoshiki like is like I know what people like.
Like no, it's funny because listen, there's. In Japan, it is very much one of the most popular online Mahjong game clients around.
That's really funny.
But it's just, it was funny seeing that on, like, the insert art. Like, you can do this, you can play a card game, you can play Mahjong, and you can kill God. What's better than that? But yeah, no, I would like to see a return of, like, physical media being given proper, you know, stuff inside it. And more of instead of just being art on a box and a disc with art on it, because like that's been the main reason I don't want to get physical, because like I don't fucking need that shit.
Well, go play Live Alive and look out for Alan Wake 2. Yes, digital please. Only
and also the Max Payne remakes, I guess, at some point. I don't know, we'll see.
Oh, who knows? Yeah, who knows? Fucking anyway. Knows
well, I mean Remedy's making it, but you know, who knows?
Who knows? I mean, if Remedy is making it, fine. But if Rockstar is like, this is ours, we'll see.
So, I'm sorry, I'm still talking about Alan Wake 2. I've thrown this show into chaos. Did you see how Sam Lake put himself in, like, the game, like, for the trailer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Did you know he actually has the voice of, I forget the actor's name, the guy who played Max Payne?
Oh, yeah. Because
like,
he...
So you have the face of the original Max Payne, and Max Payne's voice actor in Alan Wake 2. Is it Max Payne?
James McCaffrey.
Yeah, James McCaffrey. It's like,
so Max Payne is in, like, every...
Oh, yeah, he is. But it's just, it's funny seeing McCaffrey being given, giving his voice to Sam Lake's face... when that was originally what he did for Max Payne, and it's not Max Payne. It's like, wait a minute, you can't do that.
No, he can.
It's very funny. It's very funny. I can't wait to play it just for that. Yeah. Fucking funny. Very anyway, I'm sorry. This show's gone off the rails. I'm sorry. Just really like Remedy.
I also read it much like Remedy, and in that vein, I will say, go also play Control.
Yes, go play Control.
Very amazing game.
It is very good.
And will somehow tie into Alan Wake. So
also play Alan Wake, because they recently did like a remaster release.
Yeah, go play the original Alan Wake to get ready for Alan Wake 2 coming soon.
Although you don't need to play it, apparently, but whatever. Anyway, just do it anyway.
Finally, to finish off this episode, please let us know where we can find you on the internet, and if you have anything else to plug.
Well, nothing to plug at the moment, but, you know, it's just... just samneelan.gay. That's the easiest way to find me. I would normally say twitter.com/samneelan, but who knows how long that's gonna be around
for. We'll see.
We'll see, but yeah, no, just do Sam, SamNeelan.gay. That'll link you to like basically all my shit, because that's the easiest way to do that. But yeah, that's how to find me. Please be nice to me if you find me.
Yeah, be nice.
Please be nice. Please be nice.
All right. As always, you can find Kami Jace Gaming on Twitter. Me, that's Kami Jace Gaming. And you can find the Weekly Cooldown as well at WK Cooldown. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Be sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Spotify. I believe Spotify Mobile lets you do reviews. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. And remember that you can support your favorite charities and support this show. Our logo and art is done by Corgian. Follow Corgian on Twitter at DoghouseCorgian, DoghouseCorgian, DoghouseCorgian on Twitter. And our intro music is done by Riki. Find Riki on Twitter at @dog_noise, DOG_NOISE. That's all for the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace.
Don't boil your jerk chicken.
And that's Sam Neeland. Making me angry. And we'll see you next week. Not next week, the week after. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.